cliffcentral.com.
Oh, very nice. That's good luck. Oh, that's not good luck. That's just Judas Priest.
Okay.
Sorry, see, I got taken by surprise. Wild guitar in the background. If you are looking out for Gareth, well, unfortunately, he's got a migraine today.
It's raining, migraine boy.
The thought of Gareth actually hearing this when it's played again for him tomorrow.
Shame.
It is a bit of a shame, but not to worry. We are, you're still in capable hands here with Sia, Mabali, Lucas, Amanda's here as well. Palace has just come in here. Why did you all just go into the production booth right now and make all kinds of noise? Who was that for? What was that for?
What are you talking about?
You guys all just left the studio right now. Well, I was, I don't know, I was fiddling with knobs. And then there was huge commotion outside the studio. See, I'm always the last to know about these things.
I think huge commotion isn't exactly the term. It's more like how Palace and
it sounded like Justin Bieber just arrived.
No, just Palace and I always happy to see each other, that's all.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I'm not buying the story. What's really happening?
Okay.
Palace, please come to the microphone here.
Something else.
Palace, look, I mean, whenever you come in here, I mean, you've got a lovely personality, but people make a big fuss about you. What's going on?
C and I are always excited about each other, seeing each other. It's a new day. It's a beautiful day. So, I mean, it's one of those days, I guess.
Okay. Well, I will tell you this. Experience talking here. Enjoy it while it lasts, because just like this, Sia could not be talking to you.
It will never happen to me.
The devil is a liar.
That's what all 14 people that Sia the longer talks to said. They're like, no, we're going to be besties forever. I mean, yes. Mubs, you can back me up on this, right? Sia will then suddenly stop talking to you.
I can't recall of an incident where...
Well, not you personally.
Sia has stopped talking to someone, not unless they deserved being...
Hallelujah.
Never spoken to again.
I was about to say, we've been going, you know, 3 years strong, actually.
Sia's a very excitable person, and he gets along with a lot of people. And he gets excited to see a lot of people.
Okay, wait. He gets along with a lot of women.
Sight tomorrow.
You're very nice to all the women here. The guys, you're tight rep. It's either on or off. Okay, Felicia, you're actually safe.
Kind of makes
you safe.
Sense.
I want to use you. I know this.
Well, I grew up with a lot of women around me. Maybe that's why. Like, men are a completely inferior situation to
me. Okay, well, let's not open that can of worms anymore than needs to be.
Let's move on with the show, please.
Mubs, what's going on in the news? I know, obviously, the big Manchester bombing is the story that's dominating. Still, the big headline there is that it's being treated as a terror threat. ISIS apparently are claiming responsibility. And 19 fatalities so far as the day kind of gets started in Manchester. They're an hour behind us, I think. So, Mubs, what else is happening? Or do you have any more developments on this story?
No, I mean, look, you know, if you go onto Twitter, you'll see, you know, all kinds of leaders who will obviously be condemning this latest incident. If you're watching the news on television, you will notice that the streets are relatively desolate this morning. They're empty, understandably so. So a lot of people will probably avoid going into work, going to school today. There will obviously be a very heavy police presence, you know, in certain hotspots, you know, like the public transport system, for example. There'll be a heavy police presence there. And, sadly, there are also a lot of people on Twitter, you know, who are sharing pictures of their loved ones who were in attendance at this Ariana Grande concert, where they have not been able to establish whether or not these people are alive, or if, you know, unfortunately they're one of the 19 killed. So it will be a state of panic for a lot of people whose children were at this concert. TMZ has said that, you know, Ariana has now cancelled the rest of the tour because she was meant to perform in London this week. None of that will be happening. And also there'll be a lot of emotions and a lot of angry people on Twitter.
Yeah, just an update on that. There's apparently 60 children without guardians at the Holiday Inn in Manchester. So if you are missing a child, I mean, there was a call that if you were without your parents, you can just go to one spot. So there's like 60 of them there now.
See, and not to detract from this tragic, you know, main story that's in our faces, but Ariana also hasn't been having the best of times. You know, if ISIS hadn't exactly come out and claimed responsibility for this, and listen, you can never really know with those guys. But like, what if it was a personal attack on her? I don't know how I would personally feel if I was in her shoes. Cause a couple of concerts ago, a while back, she was on stage performing and this guy just appeared on stage and literally came right up behind her, and turned out to be like this crazy stalker situation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like, firstly, I would fire every single person who I deem security.
Straight away,
how the
yeah.
How did you let someone get right up behind me on stage? Because she wasn't dancing with dancers or whatever. She was all alone on stage. So who knows what could have happened. But and now there's a bombing at your concerts, girl. I just chillax for the time being. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't blame her for cancelling her concerts.
Well, the thing is, like as Mub said earlier in the first hour, is that nobody's really going to be in a mood to go to one of these things. And as a performer, and you throw your heart and soul into something, you know about that, Sia. Something like this would really kind of deflate you. Like, how do you pick yourself up as an artist? And then to a certain degree, I mean, I even saw on Twitter, she kind of felt really down. And a part of you will feel responsible. People came
Absolutely.
To see you.
Yeah, you were the main attraction.
You know, you're not going to beat yourself up about it because you're not technically responsible, but it was part of your day. It was a big part of your day, your doing, so to speak.
Shucks.
Hectic, huh?
Yeah.
And this does change the feeling you get when you are in public. I have no idea how people, for example, in New York City, you know, back in 9/11, were able to, the day afterwards, walk in public confidently or comfortably. Or, you know, now when you go to the O2 arena in the UK, how you feel. Cause I remember, you know, for example, after the Pulse nightclub shootings in Florida, you know, now when you go into a nightclub, you go, oh, what could happen? We just don't feel comfortable anymore. And it's not cool at all.
I was thinking about it yesterday. You know, people are always talking about this whole virtual reality and how innovations and technology are changing this world and how we can put on these headsets and we can do whatever we want.
Mm.
I reckon we're doing that because the world is becoming unsafe rather than the fact that technology is being so amazing. Because if we're going to, as kids, like growing up, parents aren't going to want to like let them go to pop concerts now, nightclubs when they grow up, whatever. So we're going to spend our lives in virtual reality because it's a way of staying alive.
Okay, that's a great PR spin, whichever innovation company can use. But
no, but I mean, there's a bit of truth in that. Well, you can contest it if you wish.
You're also closing the door on meeting real people and learning how to flirt, not swiping right.
Yes,
and real people can also show you a good time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a risk that you're going to have to take. Are you going to be crippled by the evident fear that surrounds you? Which, you know, you're basically at risk on a day-to-day basis. From the moment that you get into your car, your life is at risk. I mean, it's something that's very difficult to avoid. So what are you going to do? Are you going to live your life in fear every day? Or are you going to go out there with the understanding that any day could be the last day?
Well, I mean, it's been like this forever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time where you could stub your toe in the morning and you'd be dead of syphilis by the afternoon.
True.
Shame.
True.
Not the best correlation of medical conditions, but you get my point.
I understand. All right, let's do a little bit of introspection here. We're going to take a look at the strength of our passport, the South African passport.
Oh, no.
And we're going to compare it to other passports. But before we do that, we're going to take a look at the, what's this called? Is it the World Happiness Index? No, it's from the World Happiness Report, which they do on an annual basis. So the results for 2017 are now available. They were released back on the 20th of March already, which is known as International Happiness Day. Did any of you know that?
20th of March?
Let me guess. Some smug, happy country does this, right?
Well, Ben, you know, it's 155 countries in total in the world that are, excuse me, included in the World Happiness Report.
Yeah, but the one that hosts is probably like Norway or something like that.
You know, I'm going to have to do a little bit more digging to find out who exactly conducts the report. But if you want just a bit of background information with regards to the factors that are measured to determine a country's happiness scale, they take our GDP per capita into consideration, social support, healthy life expectancy, freedom to make life choices, generosity, and then perceptions of corruption, which I'm sure was the reason that we have done so poorly. I hear some of you saying. Oh, did you think I was saying that? Oh, no. I actually heard some of you saying that. Okay. So we're going to look at where South Africa stands on the global scale, and then we're going to take a look at the continental scale. Would you be surprised if I told you that we are not the happiest country on the continent?
No.
Where are we? We're only seventh. We are only seventh in the continent, with Algeria being the number one happiest country on the African continent.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, Algeria are far, far happier than South Africans. We are happier than Tunisia, Sierra Leone, and Egypt, for example. But the countries that are happier than us are in sixth place is Nigeria. In fifth place is Somalia.
Hmm.
In fourth place, Morocco. Third place is Libya. People in Mauritius are a lot happier than us. And then I already mentioned Algeria is the number one on the world happiness scale for the continent. Out of 155 countries, we came in 101st, which, yes, you know, sounds like a bad number, but apparently that's an improvement on how we were doing last year. So just imagine how you've been feeling since January 2017. And tell me if you think it's true that we are happier now than what we were last year, because that's what the World Happiness Report says. Hmm. We are a lot happier in 2017 than we were in 2016.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, 2016 was a bit of a year so for everyone, I think. So I'd say yes, happier this year than last year.
Yeah. And then right at the bottom of the list of the 155 countries. So these are the countries where, you know, it's a bit of sadness. Right at the bottom, you've got Burundi, Tanzania, Syria, of course, mm-hmm. Rwanda and Togo. They're all crowding right at the bottom of the world happiness scale.
Where's Pharrell to whip out and start singing for us again?
You know.
Yeah, I'd like to see him go to Togo and try and entertain the people there.
Yeah, snapping away with, because I'm happy.
Yeah, he said exactly right.
Not stretch so much into Syria Pharrell. With a bit of a song.
Not so
on well.
Much. Okay, so now that we know where we stand on the happiness report, let's take a look at our visa, shall we? So last year, back in November 2016, New Zealand rescinded their visa-free access for South Africans. New Zealand don't want your ass. They just don't. Now deal with it. From April this year, for example, locals will be able to enjoy visa on arrival reciprocity with Russia. If you want to go to Vladimir Land, you won't need a visa for that. Isn't that great, guys? That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that in part of the nuclear deal that's been thrown around, we paid a lot of money for that.
Sure.
It was like one of those benefits.
Yeah. It came with some nice benefits after Vlad and Jacob Zuma, you know, did the talking. So our Department of Home Affairs have officially submitted a formal proposal for the European Union to consider free visa travel for South Africans. The proposal is under consideration, according to the Department of Home Affairs. This was after the then Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba announced back in September last year that talks were held with the European Union ambassador regarding the relaxation or elimination of its visa-free requirements for the South African passport holders. So they, you know, we'll wait to find out whether any of the European countries actually want us there.
It's an interesting point, because I know there's many factors at play here and we need to get an expert in, but it didn't help that we had a lot of people of, say dodgy backgrounds almost channeling themselves through here in order to get to Europe.
Hmm.
I thought, sure.
Didn't the White Widow or one of those terrorists come via South Africa to England?
Yes. What was her name again? She was responsible for some terrorist-related activities in the UK, right?
Yeah, she had a spider name. She wasn't a White Walker. She was, I think, White Widow.
Yeah. She was also involved in the Kenya, the shooting of people in Kenya.
You're right.
And she used South Africa as a way through to Kenya.
Samantha Lithwaite.
You know your female terrorist, huh, Lucas? All over that, huh?
Yeah. Guys. She's a British woman.
No comment.
Also known as the White Widow, as Ben was saying. But yes, Samantha Louise Lithwaite. Yeah, you're right, Ben. She either came through here or she settled here for some time.
Mm. But the thing is, it wasn't so much it was her, but she had various terrorist disciples and things like that. And people generally had a very good view about South Africa a few years ago. Yeah, so good luck selling that visa story to the other countries.
Mm. Well, there are a total of 74 countries that are welcome into South Africa without a visa. This puts us in numbers 46 globally when it comes to the strength of our passport. Germany occupies the top spot. Basically, Germany has the world's most powerful passport. We are at number 46, and there are a total of 74 countries that are allowed to come into South Africa without a visa.
But that doesn't make our passport stronger if we bring people in. How many countries can we get into that makes our passport strong, right?
Yes, Ben. Well, this is the thing. So last year in September, Malusi Gigaba and them put in this application with the European Union. They're trying to get us into more countries without the visa requirement. If you'd like to get a list of the top 10 most popular visa-free destinations for South Africans, this is according to cheapflights.co.za. So according to Cheap Flights, these are the top 10 countries that you can get into without a visa as a South African.
Spoiler alert, maybe not the best countries.
Well, I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about, I'm going to start with number 10 here. How do you feel about the Republic of Ireland?
Yeah.
Apparently, yeah, sure. You don't need a visa for that.
That's,
okay.
That's a plus, yeah.
The Republic of Ireland, you can go there with no hassles. Singapore, you can go to without a visa.
Yeah, that's worth going to, yeah. Okay, I've quickly take back my comment.
Okay. Botswana, you can go into. I've heard quite a few guys talk about just how beautiful the women in Botswana are. Apparently, they trump us as South African girls.
Oh, damn.
Very beautiful people to see in
Lucas,
Botswana.
Lucas, you're shaking your head there.
No, I'm just saying that's fantastic. Botswana, yes.
Okay, very good.
Okay, Zambia, you can go to visa-free. Thailand, Ben, you've been to Thailand a few times.
Yep, easy in and out of that place, huh? Anything goes in Thailand.
Easy in and out on all levels, and my mind is now just racing, so I will stop myself right there.
I'm talking passports, I know where you're going.
I don't know a lot of people who want to go to Kim Jong-un's North Korea, but you can go to South Korea without a visa.
That's also kind of useful. Seoul apparently is amazing. We've had callers from South Korea.
Yes, we have. Yeah. South Korea you can get into, no problems. Ooh, island talk. This is my thing. This is my style. The Bahamas. See, I must plan my next holiday trip to the Bahamas. Need a visa for that.
Okay, good.
Island nation. I love it.
But you'll need some decent currency while you're there.
Also, Jamaica. You can get into Jamaica without a visa. Argentina. I didn't know this.
Yeah, because we play rugby against them and they also like steak.
And then the number one holiday destination, according to cheapflights.co.za, that you don't need a visa for as a South African, Peru. I'd love to go to Peru.
I would love to see how cheap these flights are, because South America is not a cheap flight. These people.
Is anyone thinking what I'm thinking regarding Peru?
What are you thinking?
Ayahuasca team building in Peru.
And see? Quinoa's cheap there. I mean, they literally like throw it on the floor.
How do you even know that?
Because quinoa comes from Peru and it's ridiculously expensive. It's great, but I mean, it's like they pull the piss price-wise. Huh? You go into Woolworths and you look at quinoa and you tell me it's worth the number next to that little packet.
I did not know that. Thank you very much, Ben.
So we can go for ayahuasca and quinoa. We'd come back glowing.
Yeah, well stuffed and also enlightened spiritually. Guys, did you hear about this underground explosion in Valcom last week?
Uh-oh. Has that got to do with illegal mining?
Yes.
So, I heard there's a real underworld with this stuff nowadays.
This is ridiculous. So on the onset, we all might have just heard that 34 people were killed in an underground explosion in Valcom in the Free State last week. But now with more investigation, police have actually discovered there's literally an underworld in all of these mines. So estimated in about South Africa, there are about 6,000 disused gold or chrome or diamond and platinum mines. And what happens is, of course, we now know about illegal miners that happen to still go underground and try their luck. But with that said, often miners will go down for long periods of time, for about a month or 3 months sometimes. And with that, there are some people who actually capitalize on it. So there's now this whole trade that goes on underneath. There are suppliers, you know, people who come in and actually sell food to these miners, people who sell clothes to these miners, people who sell in, well, if you think about it, you're down there for 3 months and you don't see the light of day. You might also miss the warmth of a cozy person next to you. So of course, sex sells as well. But this is ridiculous.
This is like the strangest gold rush in like history.
I find this fascinating. So let me run you through some of the costs of goods that you might find in this underworld of disused mines. So if you want some whiskey, simple whiskey, you're in a mine illegally, of course. But anyway, 3,000 rands for whiskey. Now the price just gets hiked up because you obviously can't just readily
And that's
go
no,
up to
that's
your
no fancy
pay.
Single malt. That's probably a blend of some very low standard.
Shucks. So if you think that might be a bit too much for you and you just want a simple 6-pack of Black Label beer, 1,500 rands. For a 2-liter of Coke, 100 rands. Sex with a prostitute, 2,500 rand. Girl, I'd go celibate. Ain't nobody got time
That's
for that.
That's outrageous. But then, in basic finance terms, this would mean that they are making money in order to be spending this much money.
This all doesn't make sense.
Because
how much money are you making in order to be able to afford this? Or is it really desperation? Because, you know, this is all from a police investigation where some people who have been arrested or some people who have passed away, and we now hear from their counterparts who remain nameless, speak about the fact that you are there for a long time.
But I even heard that some of these people are going into town and they are paying for things in gold. Like they're literally going to a shop and they've got gold and they're now buying cigarettes and cereal and whatever stuff.
Imagine.
But look, I'm sure there's been documentaries about this. There should be a movie about this because this is like, obviously a gold rush is what started Johannesburg and certain areas of this country, right? And same thing. People went there, they were prospecting. Industries then set up. And I know in America, I think one of the richest guys in California was a guy who sold shovels because there was this demand for shovels. Everybody wanted to make like money. So apparently here in Volcom, in these rural areas, people are making a fortune out of just supplying these people.
Shucks.
But the other side of this equation is what I want to know is how are they making this much money? Where are they selling this gold? Are you allowed to just go to a place and say, hi, this rock over here has 7 ounces of gold? And they go, cool, there's a prostitute. How does the scale and the trade work?
I also don't understand.
Who's weighing it?
You know,
mind
obviously you can't walk into your Pick and Pay with this. But if
apparently in Volcom you can.
No, but the thing is, if I go to my local spaza shop, and it's just run by my uncle.
It's slightly more entrepreneurial
actually,
in nature.
Hold up. Yes, let me take this gold. And that's why this,
But somewhere in this whole profile, something legit has to happen where things have to be accounted for, right? This gold's going to have to be registered or made legit at some stage.
Well, now, as the owner of the spaza shop who's accepted the gold, I can just go and trade it and say it was an inheritance from my uncle. Who knows better? But it's the fact that the initial trade happened between that illegal miner and that first
shop owner. But you're not taking a gold bar because a lot goes into making that beautiful gold bar that you see on those.
So then what are you taking?
Coin shop.
That's a good point.
Are you taking a gold ring? What are you actually taking when you're trading in gold?
Taking rocks.
Rocks that you mine.
I doubt these guys have a sophisticated like refining process where they're going, oh, well done, old chap. You've got 4 bars today.
Yeah.
And how do you run away with this? It's like, shit, the prostitute just stole 3 boulders from me. I knew she wasn't worth 2,500 rand.
That is.
And then what do
up.
You do as a person who accepted the rocks? How do you get your money's worth? Where do you take the rocks?
This is the thing, guys. We need to go to Volcom.
I mean, listen. Yeah.
Lucas,
it doesn't have to be quite that extreme.
Lucas,
guys.
You've been to Volcom this last year, haven't you?
Yeah, I was driving to Bloemfontein. I got lost. I found myself in Volcom.
In an illegal mine.
That's what they all say.
So I found myself in Volcom.
There was Lucas spending 100 rand for a Coke because he got lost.
So, like, imagine
paying for it in rocks.
Guys dropping 18 currents. Like, it's nothing. So people are making money there. Sia, let's do a road trip.
Look, guys, we owe to our listeners. We were the only ones covering the Henry Van Bedar case. We have to now go into these mines as well.
I'll go next weekend, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Lucas.
Lucas will go. You see how easy that was.
Rounding this list off.
But who's going to make Anthea tea?
You know, this life.
Sacrifices are so hard.
I can speak to Amanda about that.
Rounding this list off, you can get a whole cooked chicken underground for 500 rands, a loaf of bread for 150 rands, and a carton of cigarettes for 1,000 rand.
Whoa! Those prices have really been hiked up for the underground.
Even places don't stand a chance there.
What?
Oh, listen to this. A roll of toilet paper for 300 rands. And steak for 200 rands.
Better be triple ply. Triple ply gold leaf.
This is when, and we rarely say this, to the Vulcom SAPS for actually putting a stop to this, even though it was actually triggered because of the explosion. But look at how much has been unraveled.
Okay. So, you'll have
the
your...
The story is mad.
So, let me get this straight. So, you'll have your estates above ground. You know those rich estates that you, when you drive into them, they ask to chop off your finger because they need your fingerprint or whatever.
Yes.
Draw a vial of your blood.
Yeah, a blood sample.
So, and you're telling me that they are complete cities underground with entire civilizations just...
Oh, yeah. One of the...
Trading in rocks and paying 300 rand for a roll of toilet paper.
Sounds like Mad Max.
One of the miners who's unnamed in this article basically states that it's like a mini city. They are little spaces that are open for rest. So in between your shifts, there are some little rooms that have been carved into the rocks that are known as like, okay, cool. If you bring in a little lady of the night, that's where you go. It's fascinating to me. And also a question, by the way, airtime is being sold there. The price of airtime isn't revealed, but you can actually get cell phone reception for about 3 kilometers.
Underground.
Yeah. Underground.
Hot damn.
Jeepers, we can't even get cell phone reception 30 meters away from a cell tower.
No, we can't.
And these guys are getting it 3 km down. Yes, Lucas.
It took more than 3 years for Gautrain to have network there in a train.
Yeah. And these guys have got it.
And these guys have got it. Remember, in the Gautrain, you couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
But like, okay, there's just so many questions. We must move on from the story. But if you own this land, okay, let's just say Anglo once had this mine going. Anglo, of course, they've had many mines. And there are guys who can afford 7,000 rand whiskey. Maybe your mine is still working. Don't you want it back? Like, these guys are showing, and they're rocking up there with like a cell phone torch and a pickaxe, maybe. Mm. Maybe your machinery can go down there and extract things better. Like, it's just so many questions here.
Corruption is definitely to play because some members of the Vulcom government and mine management as well also say like, okay, cool, we can deem the mine clear. But meanwhile, a source has claimed that some mine management or government will rock up with actual cash. So they get the rocks and they pay the miners in cash. And hey, I guess they also then have the infrastructure to convert that gold or whatever the case is.
Okay. Well,
dodgy.
Just got a message from Rusty. He's off to Vulcom tomorrow for work and he'll gladly be our correspondent. He's actually having a meeting underground tomorrow.
Great.
Rusty, if you can elaborate on what you do, do you supply the bread, the cigarettes, the prostitutes, or if you are actually doing mining work? Mm. You got to clarify this, otherwise people will speculate. It turns out there are some cheap flights to South America. You got to go via Angolan Airways because they speak the Portuguese. They get to Brazil pretty cheap, apparently. Seychelles is also visa-free, according to the messages. And then NDP West says, I'm calling bullshit on Algeria being happy. There's no alcohol there. So they're not fooling any of us. How can they be happier than us? There's no alcohol.
I can just hear someone with a psychology background saying, yeah, but alcohol is a depressant.
Alcohol is a way of life.
So after the drinking, the hangover pretty has you feeling pretty miserable, not
still
happy.
You can't mess with our listeners. Yes, Lucas.
So while we're talking about alcohol, there's a bar in Washington, D.C., and they are well known for creating vodkas named after celebrities like Dave Chappelle and other celebrities. So now what they've done, they've went and created a Bill Cosby cocktail.
Oh boy.
So, Bill Cosby.
Oh, no,
yeah,
no, no.
I've just sent you an email.
Oh boy.
You can check the image. It looks like it has some drugs on top there. Like it
oh
has.
No.
So, and now they're receiving a backlash because people are saying, nah, this is not funny. So on the ratings, they used to have 5 stars on reviews. So now they've gone down to 1.9 because people are like, nah, this is not a joke. You can't just go and create a Bill Cosby.
Look, it's not a joke, but I got to say, yeah, that's creative. Huh?
That is creative. That's creative. And you know what is less funny than people making a Bill Cosby cocktail is Bill Cosby drugging women, which he did.
Yeah.
That's less funny.
Yeah, that is less funny.
I mean, guys, we live in the times where literally whatever you think of Kim Kardashian, instantly after her robbery, there were now these Halloween costumes that came out of the Kim Kardashian mid, you know, like, what's it called? The mid-crime outfit. So it was like a robe and rope around your wrists. So, like, people are always just making a quick buck, and sensitivity is totally out the door, sadly.
A quick laugh.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I saw a great meme this morning. It's Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jerusalem is the Wailing Wall, right? Mm-hmm. It's where you go and you put a message in there. And if you're Jewish, you pray to the wall.
Why do they call it wailing?
Because you wail at it.
Oh, gosh.
You wail.
When you pray, you
so
wail.
So when you're walking past, you're just hearing a lot of people just crying out.
I've been there. It's the weirdest place. There's just people. They are wailing at a wall.
Okay.
So you get these really Orthodox Jewish guys with the flowy sideburn things.
Yes.
Sorry, I know this is very much insensitive of me,
like,
not to know the word of that.
Pigtails.
No, they're not pigtails.
Well, pigtails from... Anyway, we know what we're talking about.
You get
about.
Me,
don't
right?
know the terminology.
And everyone prays the wall, or you can put a message in the wall, and there's this great meme of Donald Trump, and it just says, wow, this guy really loves walls. And he's standing there, and he's putting a prayer into one of the walls.
Well, also from his recent trip, though, there's now this video of him and the first lady walking on a tarmac, and he reached over to hold Melania's hand, and Melania sort of like swipes his hand away. So I don't know if there's trouble in paradise or whatever the case is, or
no,
she
no. I know exactly what happened here. He forgot where he was, and he was trying to grab her by the you know what. He wasn't reaching out for her hand. So then she kind of slapped it away to say, hey, hey, there are cameras right now. Don't do that thing.
Donald, you're not in America.
Oh, man. No, guys.
So you know how people love to ask questions about how, guys, where does hugging come from? And the first person who hugged another person, that must have been such a strange sight and a strange experience for them. So there are a series of questions that have been asked that a couple of people have attempted to answer. Everything from why we shake hands to why we yawn to why we kiss even. So let's go through some of these.
I think these questions already were taken from high people. Like, 'cause who questions where hugging originated from unless...
Well, I mean, if you think about it, it's such a strange behavioral act, you know. I walk close up to you, I completely break your personal boundary space, and then I pull you into my body and I squeeze you. Yes, it feels nice and it releases all sorts of feel-good hormones, but imagine the first hug. I mean, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, I think it came from people who couldn't fight very well. And then they just got into an embrace and they were like, well, we can't fight, so we might as well like each other.
So where did the first handshake originate from? In 1987, Stephen Potter entered the Guinness Book of World Records for the most amount of handshakes in a single day. How many, you ask? 19,550 handshakes. Is the Guinness Book of World Record
for handshakes. His hand must have fallen off after that.
His hand must have fallen off after that, Ben. Can you imagine...
The bacteria
that he was left with after all those handshakes. Ugh.
That's his claim to...
The longest handshake record is shared by two pairs, Alistair Galpin and Don Purden from New Zealand. And Nepalese brothers Rohit and Santosh Timlisina. The longest handshake record, 33 hours and 3 minutes. They shook hands for longer than a day. For longer than a day, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's just this some useless information out of interest.
I wonder what was the discussion there.
There are large, there are archaeological ruins and texts which show people shaking hands as far back as the 5th century BC, but there is no official reason for how it came about.
Well, I guess just if you look at all animals, right, there's some sort of contact which would suggest there's interaction going on.
Yeah.
So with humans, we do everything with our hands. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but like, you know, it's like milking a cow. Who was the first person that thought that was a good idea?
I don't know. Ooh,
I mean, who was walking around going, yeah, that bag of dicks there, that's me. I'm going to start tugging on that. That's going to be a good thing for me to do today.
Yeah. And then milk started coming out and he thought, oh, hang on, you mean these things are useful?
It's like, okay, well, now that I've done this, I should probably put that in my mouth. Like, see, this is why we need time travel, people. This is it. We need time travel to work these mysteries out.
Oh, I don't want to think about.
Sia will do the milk, the milking. We'll go look at the handshake.
So,
did I have to opt for that one? No, thank you.
All that people are able to say is to predict that shaking hands dates as far back as the 5th century before Christ, but nobody has been able to answer as to how it officially came about.
Okay, so they were shaking hands when Jesus got into the mix.
Essentially, yes.
Right, so we can't. So speak. Okay.
Now, I didn't know this. Apparently, the V sign is considered an insult in some countries.
Most countries. It's just here. People think it's a gang sign or some other crap.
The V sign or like the peace situation?
V.
It basically means like up yours. It's very offensive. Yeah. But you get people who like post the photos and they have to do things with their hands for some strange reason.
Well,
and they do that.
You can also stop a taxi like that in some townships.
Oh, well, I mean, look.
Yeah.
There's so many signs for stopping taxis. Yeah. I can understand why they had to incorporate the V sign.
Yeah, if you go into to Val Sharpeville, that's how you stop a taxi.
So, yes, it is considered up
yours. What do you do for Velcom? Is that three fingers? I'm going mining. Yeah, three fingers. Gotcha.
It is considered an up yours in certain parts of the world, such as the UK, Australia, Ireland, Canada, and even here in South Africa. I genuinely didn't know that that's an insult. Anyway, according to History Extra, the act dates all the way back to the 15th century during the Battle of Agincourt. The popular theory was that the French would chop off the index finger and the middle fingers of archers to prevent them from shooting arrows. Now, those who still had their fingers would walk around showing them off to their enemy to ridicule them.
That's brilliant.
And that is apparently how it started and how it developed into an insult.
I don't even care if that's wrong. That's just too good. It has to be right. That's amazing.
This is insane. Now, what about the yawning thing? Why on earth do we yawn and why is it so contagious?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the contagious part is baffling.
Yawning is associated with tiredness and sleeping. Despite us being able to prove, or rather to put rovers on Mars and explore the depths of the Mariana Trench, researchers are apparently still perplexed about why it is that we yawn. So a couple of theories have been suggested. One study claims that a yawn is your body's way of rapidly decreasing carbon dioxide and increasing oxygen. And they say that getting that rush of oxygen into our bloodstream helps to wake us up because your body feels tired. So then you yawn because it's trying to snap out of feeling tired. That's one of the suggested theories. It's also theorized as being associated to our ancestral pack mentality. University at Albany psychology professor Gordon Gallup said that during human evolutionary history, when we were subject to attacks by a group, then the ability to detect danger would have had a critical relationship to your ability to respond to it on a moment-to-moment basis. If everyone yawns in response to seeing someone yawn, it reinstates an optimal level of vigilance on the part of people in the group. That's one theory that's been proposed.
Yeah, see, that theory will not be sold above the archer's theory.
Oh, okay, you're not convinced. Another theory for why we yawn that's been suggested is that yawning helps with your body being able to regulate its temperature. So a good hearty yawn apparently helps with regulating our body temperature. I don't know. I don't like any of these proposed theories.
No, I don't either.
Well, well, well.
Let's quit while we're ahead on the archer.
No, you like the archer theory, and that's the one that you're sticking to. And if anybody were to dispute it, you would not believe them.
Hmm.
All right. Migs has a question.
Of course he does.
But it's for Gareth, who's got a migraine.
Well, then we're going to have to save that for tomorrow.
Oh, no, wait. I can fulfill this role here.
Okay.
Okay, so Migs' question is, Sia, choose your death. Ba-ba-bum. Backstabbed by Brother Lucas. That's option A.
Oh.
Okay. B, fatality by Ben. That's me.
What is fatality in what sense?
Like Mortal Kombat. I'll rip
either
your
way,
head
you're
off
dead.
C, hit and run by Mabali. Mm-hmm. Or D, shotgun blast in the face by Gareth. Migs, these are getting very dark, I gotta say. Yeah. It started off kind of like quite, you know, interesting. But now Sia is basically being savagely murdered. Sia, how do you want to be killed? Seeing as we've already given you the options. Backstabbed by Lucas.
Backstabbed and fatality by me. Are too, like, I think it would take too long and too painful.
Hit and run by Mabali or shot in the face by Gareth.
I've always liked the, look at me use the word like so morbidly, but there's something about being run over, then everyone like gathers around you like, what happened? And then like, it's just like a movie scene where like this camera can slowly pan up and out and then the movie ends. So I think, and plus Mabali can hire a fancy car for the case, not like an old Bucky. That okay. would be sad, right. But like a Maserati situation for me to go out in style.
Because if you're going to be hit by a car,
you know,
must be a luxury car. That's
Thank
the most
you.
Important thing.
They must remember me that way.
Right. So we got an update from Rusty. He says he does actually work in mining. The mine he is going to is it no longer runs, but the mining house is keeping the mine open to simply keep it from falling apart. This is called care and maintenance. The mine is 2 kilometers deep and 2 kilometers deep, and each level is many kilometers long. The security there is a joke. I can go underground without an appointment or meeting set. The newer mines have good security though.
See?
But you can go underground without too much effort. The legal mines are called zamazamas. So, well, Rusty's basically giving you the lowdown there.
Rusty, I think you can put your Deborah Patter on and go and get something for us.
But again, with so many questions, but when you go in these mines that are kilometers long, like you can get lost so easily. It's not like there's a network of lights or anything like that. You can get lost so easily. You get cell phone reception. So,
Yeah. And there's network coverage down there. Use your GPS to find your way out.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Not too shabby. You'll find your way there. So, guys, here's something. You know the good old saying, you can choose your family. Well, you can choose your friends, but not your family. Right?
Yes, yeah.
Exactly. Well, this is like a perfect example where sometimes I'd actually appreciate a family member like this. So, Ben, there was a boxing match, actually, that took place recently in the States between this guy from America himself. His name is Durrell. And a boxer. Andre, there we go. I knew my accent was wrong. I was like, no, why am I going Afrikaans in this entire situation? Sorry, now the story is taking a bit too long to load. But basically, Andre and another boxer were in the box match, of course. And throughout the course, Andre's opponent actually was like, kind of, I don't know what the correct term is, but he was winning by like, you know, few jabs and punching and whatnot. But because there was a point where the bell actually went off, but still somehow a punch landed on Andre's face, the match was disqualified because, I don't know, that's a foul, is it? Like when you punch someone after the bell has gone.
It's frowned upon.
There you go.
It's illegal, but...
But, you know, that is why family comes in, because Andre's uncle didn't exactly like this, because he is like, how dare you punch my nephew after the bell has gone? And what did Andre's uncle do? Actually got up into the ring himself and punched Andre Durrell's opponent, which is Venezuela's Jose Uzategui. Now, this video has now gone viral on the internet, so you can sort of search that. Just Google, if you want some sort of a little highlight in your day, Google US boxer's uncle punches opponent. It is absolutely hilarious.
I shall do.
Then now I have to ask, has your family ever stepped into one of your situations?
Well, like fighting families.
And helped you. Yeah.
See, like families who stick together after they fight like this, it's quite common. So I'm not saying it's common because they're common, but it's a regular occurrence that generally boxers have family members who will box as well.
I haven't had a situation since I was in primary school where I got my butt kicked by two girls.
Mm-hmm.
But that was because I had said horrible things about them.
No.
both of them?
Well, yes. I was,
on the crowd, huh?
How old was I? Sure, I was in primary school. That's all I remember. And so we decided to settle it on the playground, and I got my butt kicked because it was two against one.
How badass are you? Take on these two nasty, wretched
two against one. Then they're also older girls, and she still has the confidence to go.
No, we were all the same age.
Oh, you were the same.
So yeah. It was like my buddy Malloy on the field, and you're like, bring it, bitches.
Yeah.
But since then, I haven't been in an incident, no.
You got your Manny Mayweather going on there. Because I asked this, I'm trying to recount in my life. I remember I was getting bullied in primary school. And so, like, I went home one day in absolute tears. I told my parents. I thought, like, that's it. Parents, you know, family stepping in. Shit is going to get solved. My parents went to school. They stopped my bullies because, like, we were sitting in our car. And I was like, there they are. They're coming in the morning. And so my parents stepped outside. They're like, okay, yeah, we heard you're bullying our son. What are your names? We're going to report you. And my dad starts writing one of the guy's names. And he goes, oh, Sithole. As in, is your father so-and-so? And the dude says, yep. And he goes, oh, I know your dad. Don't you have X number of siblings? So it turned into this, like, massive reunion for them. I was like, hey, listen, like, you're losing the plot. You're meant to be here for me. So that's when I stopped relying on family. Like, I wish I had an uncle who could actually have punched someone for me. So disappointed. This is why I'm so scarred in my life, guys.
Yeah, look, some family members are hardcore. You know, you've got your Uncle Arnold's and your...
Yes.
Some family members will never let you down. They will always be there for you.
Yeah, and like maybe it's mostly uncles because uncles, they maybe don't have kids as well. Then they feel extra protective over nieces and nephews.
Getting involved in your life.
That's how I'm going to be. I'm going to be that guy.
Are you going to be an Uncle Arnold? When your nieces and nephews do something wrong.
Depends what they do.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. Murder, maybe shooting someone.
No,
while
if you murder
the
someone,
toilet.
If you murder someone, you're on your own. It's a terribly terrible business. That. Speaking of which, is there anything new from the Henry from Bedard case? Is there anything?
What? Sorry, say that again.
Is there anything new from the Henry von Bedard case? I'm not picking anything up.
Yeah, things are kind of gone quiet.
The last I heard is after that long phone call was released and made public, the arguments in court were whether, you know, Henry was indeed laughing or if he was sobbing. Because remember, initially there was that speculation of, I'm sorry, did I just hear him laugh on the phone? Yeah. So that's what they were arguing about the
but
last
that's such
I
a
checked.
Subjective thing, because even if he was laughing, you get nervous laughter. Mm. Like, what I want to see in this trial, again, this is me and my glutton for entertainment, but I want to see some colorful character witnesses here. I want to see, like, Vimpy from high school, who's got, like, such lekker things to say about him, which obviously have no relevance, but they'll try it anyway. I want to see stuff like that.
This is now, dare I say people are now losing interest, because
they
even
are.
When you now search for von Bredar stories or updates, it's like right at the bottom of a page of whatever blog you visit. But an update is that a third medical doctor has now testified in court about the wound sustained by the accused, Henry von Bredar. So Dr. Michelle Fonsale is the third one who testified and basically said that, she was the one who treated von Bredar a few hours after the attack back in Jan of 2015. She just said that the wound that Henry sustained, which is this abdominal wound, was not deep enough to be stitched. And so all she did was staple it. And that she said that
She did was staple it.
I mean, like, but come on.
I'd take a stitch any day.
No, but I need more. Don't just talk. talk to me about the proceed. Just tell me something juicy, like that'll actually shift the trial. And all she really said that does raise a bit of an eyebrow was the first time she encountered Henry, he had this calm and formal demeanor. And that the second time she went to check up on Henry in the couple of hours after the attack, when Henry now came with police, he now had this like changed sort of attitude, like, oh no, let me, dare I say, play the part. So that mm-hmm. might be interesting and lends to this whole idea that Henry had this shift in behavior. Between the actual attack and afterwards when people now started coming
around. But then, you know, again, judging from what I learned during the OJ case, doesn't put the axe in his hand though. This is all superficial, circumstantial.
Well, one of the arguments that had been raised last week was that those injuries he sustained were self-inflicted. Mm-hmm, so I guess they're trying to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, but they were saying that 2 years ago when they first saw him.
Mm.
Yeah. Anywho's, I'm used out. I need a bit of a break.
Yeah.
Get some water. We need to readjust. If you haven't heard Gareth's voice in quite some time, it's because he's fast asleep, hopefully. He's got a bad migraine today. And he'll be back tomorrow, hopefully. But we can only carry on with the show. So keep the messages coming. Just a couple here before we get into the third hour, because we've got Stoffel coming in. That's going to be our... what should we call him? Like hair stylist? We need like a fancy title. Because we can't just say hairdresser. Anyone's got a hairdresser. Stoffel's more than that.
Hair extraordinaire.
Okay, we'll work on that in the break. But
hair par excellence.
So on the WhatsApp line here, the first cow was definitely milked by some pervert into bestiality. Yeah, not going to really contest that. Huh? Mm. And then Graham says about the whole shaking hands thing. Shaking hands with the right hand is a sign of peace, as you're not drawing a sword on your counterpart. That kind of makes sense, right?
I did not know that.
Because, like, your right hand's your sword hand, and everyone was just killing each other back in those days.
Mm.
So if you're shaking your hand, it means you are without sword.
Okay. Sounds plausible.
Which would then, that's how greetings started. If you didn't want to kill someone, they were like, yeah, maybe we can get to know each other.
Like a truce. Yeah.
Yeah. We live in a fascinating world. We do indeed. Anyway, next hour coming up after this. This is Luke Christopher with his song, Most Holy Water. CliffCentral.com.